program does not create an attorney-client relationship between Moss and Barnett, a professional association, or any attorney appearing on this program and any caller or listener. Please remember that we can only give general information, and every case is unique. Always check with your individual attorney for any specific legal concerns. If you are in need of specific legal advice or are looking for an attorney, please do not hesitate to give Moss and Barnett a call at 612-877-5000.
This is WCCO's Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett.
Thanks so much for joining us. It looks like the rain will move out. The heat and humidity will move in. We've got a great show lined up for you today. Tom Schroyer, our host, is away. Susan Rode is in today hosting the program. And you brought a panel of guests today, Susan.
I did. I brought two of my favorite lawyers from our firm today, Steve.
That's great.
And I don't always say that, but we won't say who I didn't say that about.
Very good.
I actually brought Cindy Ackerman with today, and Cindy is my go-to person at the firm. She is one of our trust and estates attorneys and one of our partners. And I, in fact, have in my library a standard email to Cindy with a regarding stupid question line on it, because I have about one a week. She's also an honorary member of our family law department because she does a lot of work with us on our prenuptial agreements and is really a source of and a wealth of information for us. She's also busy, though. She's hard to get a hold of because she's now co-authored two books, the Minnesota Trust Administration book and the Minnesota Estate Administration book. So if she's not writing, we can usually get her to help us. My other guest is Jana Deach. And Jana is part of our family law department. Jana and I work a lot together on premarital agreements and writing. She, too, is a co-author at the moment. She's working on creative property divisions and a chapter for the new Minnesota Family Law Financial Desk book that will be coming out. And, in fact, is more dedicated than Mr. Schroyer, I might add, because she's here on her vacation today to be with us.
Good
yes.
For her.
And you'll recall that Jana is part of our Norwegian contingent in our department.
So, I do remember that.
Yes. Well, we're here today on a tough topic, interesting topic, and that's assisted reproductive technology and how this affects the laws in the state of Minnesota and how it may affect our families. And, you know, frankly, Jana, I thought this would be a topic that would be at a bioethics convention or at a doctor's convention, but not on a legal radio show. So why are you here? What does this have to do with us?
Well, more and more we're seeing assisted reproductive technology coming up in both family law issues and in probate issues or trust and estates issue, which is why we're here to talk about it today. And one thing that we do want to get across to our audience today is we recognize that there are very strong beliefs and feelings regarding the issue of assisted reproductive technology, or the acronym ART, which is what we'll be referring to it today. And the purpose of the show is not to debate the ethics of assisted reproductive technology, but simply we're trying to address the issues that have come up in the last several years that impact both family law issues and probate issues, and just talking about what both practitioners need to be mindful of today, and also if you are in that situation, what you may need to be discussing with your attorney as issues do arise.
You know, Cindy, this is a fairly new acronym, ART. I think the first time I heard it, I thought it was dealing with art, like a picture. So what is assisted reproductive technology? What are we really talking about when we talk about that?
Well, assisted reproductive technology is really medical or a scientific intervention for the purpose of achieving a live birth. And really, the technology has been around since the end of the late 70s. But because the science has really progressed in the last few years, it has really added complexity to the legal issues surrounding the child.
So are we talking about test tube babies?
Yes, we are.
Okay. So in general, you know, we have heard a lot of stories on the news about some of this. Well, Jana, what is the law in Minnesota from family law perspective about ART or assisted reproductive technology?
Well, interestingly, there really is no Minnesota law that deals with assisted reproductive technology, or there's very little out there. There was legislation that was brought forth in 2008 in the Minnesota House and the Senate that dealt with how to define assisted reproductive technology and how you're going to treat a child under how you're, you know, how that child is being conceived and who's the parents, who's the child, and establishing rights and duties as either a parent or a child. However, that legislation was vetoed. And we understand that these are very tough issues, and so it's very hard to get legislation on these issues because you're dealing with a very delicate subject matter, and you have to be very, very careful in how you're drafting those laws and how it's going to apply in this realm of art or assisted reproductive technology and how it's going to impact families, either in a family law situation or in a probate situation.
You know, thinking about that this is such a private issue, do we really need law? I mean, is this an area that the government should be intruding on? Should we have laws on assisted reproduction technology?
That's an excellent question, and that's one that I think everybody needs to be thinking about. You're right, it is an extremely private issue for a lot of people. And at the moment, because there is no law on the books in Minnesota, people have been going to third-party contracts, or sometimes referred to as third-party fertility contracts, if they're going to be getting into the area of using either a donor or a surrogate to achieve a child, and putting forth those types of agreements together. But then you've got a question of, should it be kept privately, or do we need some set of legislation that's going to also be governing those contracts.
So without consistent legal rules, what's happening is we're formulating all these private contracts and private rules and hoping they're enforceable.
Correct.
And so what kinds of things are going wrong? I mean, why would we want some consistency in this?
Well, I think there's several areas that could go wrong, and just a few examples of those are, for let's say you've hired a surrogate to carry a child. What happens when that surrogate doesn't want to turn that child over to the intended parents? And how does that get enforced? How do those agreements get enforced? How does the court interact in these situations? Another situation is, who will end up paying child support? What if you have a donor who has contributed genetic material? Is that person going to be held financially responsible for that child? And how is the law going to treat that child? And how do the courts get involved? Another issue that gets very sticky and technologically is, who's the parent? When a court is having to deal with an issue of maybe financial support, they also have to determine who has standing to claim, I am the parent of this child, and how do we deal with this? And then sometimes you have a situation where you could have more than one father, for example.
I think that's a good place to start when we come back, Steve.
We have more on the way. A good topic today. Fascinating. Susan Rode hosting Cindy Ackerman and Jana Deitch. It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett, each and every Saturday between noon and 1 o'clock. By the way, you can go online for more info on this topic and all our programs. That's moss-barnett.com. We'll be back in a moment here on News Radio 830 WCCO.
This is Sidebar on Minnesota Law.
You can't handle the truth.
Excuse me, Your Honor. Two youths.
Are you sure this is legal?
You think you know every trick in the book, and they come up with another one.
A law firm ahead of its time. Did you know Elsie Wolf joined Moss and Barnett in 1947, becoming only the second woman to be admitted to a major Minnesota law firm?
Minnesota Law is presented by Moss and Barnett and returns in a moment on News Radio 830 WCCO.
Welcome back. It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett, available online at moss-barnett.com. Susan Rode is our host today. Cindy Ackerman and Jana Deitch in studio. And a topic that technology has brought us. There's no doubt. I can't imagine that 50 years ago, the law or anyone could have imagined these challenges.
Well, that's why it is challenging, Steve, is because we don't have law yet. The law has absolutely not kept up with what's happening, technology, and we're having all kinds of challenges. Now, Jana, when we left, you had raised the issue of a child having more than one father. Tell me how that happens.
Well, it can happen in actually a number of different ways, but one is if a woman has a baby and she's married, her husband is going to be a presumed father, so that's one father. If they've used genetic material that's been donated by another man, that's in a sense a biological father, that's another presumed father. So now you've got two fathers, and in any situation you could have either one of them asserting their parental rights in a situation involving that child, which can get very complicated.
So who decides then if you have both fathers asking to be father?
Well, then it is left with the courts to determine how a decision is going to be made as to who is going to be determined to by the courts to legally be that child's father. And you get, I think in most cases, very unfair and bad results sometimes when a court is left to decide that issue without other means to be able to determine.
And these can be some of our difficult cases from a family court perspective, in terms of both fathers wanting to have a relationship and having some very hard legal fights over that. What other issues come up in the divorce setting regarding assisted reproduction therapy?
One issue that has come up when you have parties who have used assisted reproductive technology to have a child during the marriage, sometimes there is material that's been stored or frozen that when parties are going to get a divorce, now both parties are trying to assert a claim over that stored material, and both are fighting over who's going to get it. Sometimes you have a situation where, let's say, mother wants the stored material because she wants to have another child, either herself or through a gestational carrier, and father is saying, I don't agree to that. I do not want to have another child, and I want to retain the rights to that stored material. And so now courts are in a situation of dealing with who is going to be awarded that stored material if either party is going to be awarded that material.
And there can be some pretty serious legal implications for the donor of the material if it's the father. Is that correct?
That is correct, because you can have a situation where if that material is used to create another child, it could establish a duty by that father to support that child financially. You have child support issues. Then you also get into issues of the rights of that child to inherit from that father when that father dies. And so it does create very complex legal issues that are difficult to deal with, and the courts are doing the best they can, but there's no easy answer in a lot of these situations.
So do courts actually have to decide who's going to get the genetic material, if anyone?
Yes, sometimes they do. And what I've seen so far in case law, now there is no Minnesota case law on this issue, but case law from around the country, most of the courts are taking the position that they're not going to, I guess, force anybody to become a parent against their will. So if you have one parent who is really against having that material used to create another child, the courts are going to say then, no, the mother or whoever wants it is not going to get it. They're not going to create a situation where that it's going to create that kind of legal obligation with a parent who doesn't want to be a parent. So that has come up, yes.
My goodness. Is this something, Jana, if a couple is looking at having a child through a surrogate parent or a surrogate mother, for example, is this something they should just call their business lawyer about or consult with their neighbor who's an attorney? I mean, would most attorneys be conversant in this law?
No. And this is one area where we cannot stress enough the importance of finding the right attorney in drafting these types of agreements. They are highly complex, complicated. There are numerous issues that need to be dealt with in these agreements that have to be drafted very carefully and very technically. And so you cannot just go to any family law attorney. You cannot just go to any probate attorney to be able to draft these. And in fact, in the Minneapolis area, we can maybe think of a handful of people who really have the expertise to be drafting these types of agreements. And if someone does want more information, they can go to the Moss and Barnett website. We do have a couple of links that are set up. One is to the AAML, which is the American Association of Matrimonial Lawyers, which would have a link to additional information on assisted reproductive technology, and also to AFCC, which is the Association of Family and Conciliation Courts, which would also provide you additional information in this area.
And in fact, when you and I were talking, there's only about three or four lawyers we thought of in the entire city that would be able to handle a surrogacy contract. So they really are difficult, and this is not a form practice at all.
Exactly. And so you do have to find the right person who can draft these contracts for you. But, you know, if they are drafted properly, most courts are going to uphold these agreements, and there has been case law in Minnesota that has, you know, upheld these types of contracts when there has been disputes. And so, but it is critical that you have the correct language in the agreement, which is why you have to go to the right attorney to draft these.
So even though we have no law, you could end up in court on one of these situations.
You absolutely could, which is, again, why you want to be very careful in how you draft these agreements. And the other issue that you need to be thinking about is if you have entered into one of these agreements and you have genetic material that's being stored and you are in the process of maybe getting a divorce or thinking about getting a divorce, the other thing you need to be mindful of is maybe withdrawing your consent to have that material used so that you're not creating a situation where you have a child who either you're going to be financially responsible for or they may be able to inherit under your estate if you did not want to create another child.
And I want to pick up on that when we come back, Steve.
All right, very good. Susan Rhoda is our host, Cindy Ackerman. Janet Deitch in the studio, Assisted Reproduction, Redefining the Parent-Child Relationship, is the topic today on the program. It is Minnesota Law. Welcome back. It is Minnesota Law. It comes your way each and every Saturday between noon and 1 o'clock. Our host, Tom Schroyer, is away today. Susan Rhoda is hosting the program. Her guest, Cindy Ackerman, and Janet Deitch, Assisted Reproduction, Redefining the Parent-Child Relationship. Susan?
Well, Steve, when we left, I was talking to Janet about an interesting topic, and that is upon divorce, you have to make agreements about how you're going to treat the genetic material and whether you're going to destroy it or who's going to be awarded that. And in fact, it's treated like property, Janet, is it not?
It really is, because it's going to be awarded to one parent or the other or to neither parent. And so it really does get into the area of treating it as property.
Which is fascinating. Now, Cindy, I must say, when I heard that you were going to join us for this discussion today, I was a little surprised. And my first thought was, Cindy deals basically with people that have passed on. And why would assisted reproductive technology be important to you? So why is it important in laws for probate and trust?
Well, Susan, I thought you were going to blame me for this whole program.
Well, I could do that, but I was being nice.
Okay.
But, yeah.
Well, the fact is that assisted reproductive technology is causing a question about who is a child for inheritance purposes. And Minnesota legislature in May modified the probate code to help define when a child conceived under assisted reproductive technology as a child for inheritance purposes.
I think it's fascinating that probate law has taken the lead in creating law on this subject rather than family law, which is the logical place that you think you would hear about it. What caused this law? I mean, why was this such a pressing issue?
Well, Susan, I've been doing estate administration for over 20 years, and beneficiaries of estates usually have two questions. How much am I getting, and when do I get it? And when you have a child conceived of assisted reproduction that could be conceived many years after the father died, we can't answer those questions because we don't know how many other children will be born and how many shares we're going to have to divide the estate. And so under the probate code now, we are trying to define that so we have some certainty in administering estates.
So we're talking about post-death children, correct?
That's correct. It's also referred to as post-mortem children. This is where the deceased father has, as an example, the deceased father has genetic material stored, and maybe many years after his death, his widow uses that material to conceive a child.
And in fact, this has actually been happening more since we've been engaged in conflict in Iraq and Afghanistan. And
yes, I believe that a lot of soldiers do have material stored, and this also comes up in cancer patients will often have material stored before they go through chemotherapy.
So what is Minnesota law on this now?
Well, Minnesota has taken a very conservative approach. They followed the old traditional rule that a child of assisted reproductive technology must be conceived before death. can be in gestation, so the child is conceived but hasn't been born yet at the time of death, and that child would be considered a child for inheritance purposes.
If you didn't have that law, could a claim be made when? I mean, if there was genetic material stored, for example, and the mother conceived 2 years after the father had died, could that child still have a claim on the father's estate?
Before this law, it's a possibility. There's no Minnesota case law to explain what would have happened. And it's not just Minnesota that's experiencing this. A lot of states are experiencing it, and over a third of the states now have some type of law. For example, in California, California recognizes postmortem children, and as long as they're born within 2 years after the death, then they would be considered a child entitled to inheritance.
So really, you have to leave these estates in California then open for a significant period of time.
They would, unless the material is destroyed or there's some type of agreement among all the parties.
So how has this new law changed your job?
Well, it's added a few more lines to my estate planning worksheet. We now have to discuss with clients if they have material stored, what their feelings are about a postmortem child receiving a share of the estate. And it's not just the parent level. It's also the grandparent level, because there was a case, for example, in New York, where it was grandfather that had died and left a trust. And son died 6 months before grandfather and didn't have any children at death, but had material stored. And his widow, 3 years after his death, conceived a child with that material. And there was no law in New York to guide them, and the court just came down and said these children are his children, and they're entitled to a share of grandfather's trust.
It seems like without a law, there'd be some chance for some pretty creative abuses of the system, so to speak.
I think that's correct, and certainly a lot of contention within families.
And certainly not something that grandfather ever planned for in the New York case.
No, absolutely not. And, you know, this is such a private discussion and private matter. I don't think people tell even their families what they're doing. And so, you know, maybe grandfather wouldn't even know about it, hadn't even had a chance to think about whether he would want those children to be a beneficiary of his trust.
Is that a difficult area for you, Cindy, in raising this topic with your clients or making them aware of it?
Well, it's very delicate and it's very new, and it's something that I don't think most people think about. So they come in, they have an idea of what they want to accomplish, and then you start throwing out all these very new things, and it just sometimes it adds just an extra level of complexity to the discussion.
Well, and discussing your upcoming death is an anxious time, I think, for anyone at any rate. Jana, do you find that this is a hard topic for you also in talking to clients about?
Well, I think, as Cindy pointed out, it is a delicate area, and now we are realizing that as more people are using assisted reproductive technology, it is a discussion we have to have where, as we talked about earlier, a few years ago, it wouldn't be something that we would even think about discussing with our clients. But now we do need to know, you know, we have to start asking those questions of our clients. You know, do you have material stored? Is this going to be an issue in a divorce or in a probate situation? And because we're going to need to address that, we're going to need to find a way to deal with it. Even if there isn't legislation on the books that we can turn to, as attorneys, we're going to need to find a way to solve that problem, especially if we've got both parties who want that material. So it has certainly raised new issues to talk to clients about, and puts it on the attorneys to come up with some creative solutions to resolve those issues.
And Cindy, if we look at the law in this area, do you have to follow the law? Can you, in your estate plan, do something different? Or?
Well, you know, the intestacy law in Minnesota is a default. So you can, you know, create a will, do a revocable trust, or any other form of estate planning, and you know, put in what you want. You can provide for these children, or you can expressly say these children are not included.
Have you had any experience with some of the different options that people have used, or have you thought about options for this?
You know, I have to confess, this is so new. We haven't really had clients dealing with this yet, and we haven't really thought about all the options.
But it's something it sounds like the client should be talking to their lawyers about if they have an estate plan.
Absolutely. It's one of the topics that has to come up, and you know, it's the attorney-client relationship is confidential, and so they should feel free to at least tell their attorneys that they have this material and what the situation is.
You know, I want to turn to some more of the problems that arise here, because I think that people think, well, you know, this is never going to happen to me, or, gee, we had a really good working relationship, and this isn't a problem. But, Cindy, you raised the issue of, you know, someone 3 years later coming in and saying, hey, now I, you know, want to claim rights to this inheritance. And what are some of the other problems that either of you see?
You know, the other, Jenna was talking about who gets the genetic material on a divorce, and the same issue comes up with at death. If you have material that's stored, it's property, and it can be, you know, given away under your will, and so the question is who is entitled to receive it. And there have been some cases where a divorced man has donated, or, well, we in probate court we call it devised, but you gave the property to his girlfriend. And then his girlfriend conceived children after his death.
And would those children then have a right to make a claim?
Maybe, depending on the state and the law of the state.
And I want to follow up on some of those claims that are out there when we come back.
All right. It is Susan Rode, Cindy Ackerman, and Jana Deitch, all in studio, assisted reproduction, redefining the parent-child relationship. For more on this topic and other programs, feel free to go online, moss-barnett.com. We'll return in a moment here on News Radio, 830-WCCO.
This is Sidebar on Minnesota Law.
You can't handle the truth.
Excuse me, Your Honor. Two youths.
Are you sure this is legal?
You think you know every trick in the book, and they come up with another one.
Moss and Barnett, a history of excellence. Did you know Jesse Van Valkenburg opened his law office at 236 Hennepin Avenue in 1896? Leaving Moss and Barnett with a legacy of professionalism that we honor from our offices on the 48th floor of the Wells Fargo Center in the heart of Minneapolis.
Minnesota Law is presented by Moss and Barnett and returns in a moment on News Radio 830 WCCO.
Welcome back one more time to Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett, available online at moss-barnett.com. Tom Schroyer is away. Susan Rode is our host today on the program. Joining us in studio, Cindy Ackerman and Jana Deitch. Assisted reproduction, redefining the parent-child relationship. Complicated. New technology. New things to think about.
Very complicated. And in fact, when we were on break, Cindy, you raised an issue I hadn't even thought of, and that is the children of ART and their rights to Social Security benefits. Can you say more about that?
Sure. The Social Security Administration follows state inheritance laws to determine which children are entitled to the child survivor benefit. So when father dies and there are minor children, they are entitled to a survivor benefit until they're, I think, 18. But the Social Security Administration uses each state's law, so it's different among the different states. And so, for example, my two examples, California, children born 2 years after would be entitled to Social Security benefits, but in Minnesota they would not.
And Jana, that area of having law in different states is really adds to the complexity of this whole area, doesn't it?
Very much so. And that's another something we had kind of talked about earlier, too, is a choice of law issue, and where you have maybe you've got a surrogate who lives in one state, you have intended parents who are living in Minnesota, and maybe you've got somebody else who's donated genetic material in another state. What law is going to govern, and how do courts resolve those types of issues?
And more even having those people in different countries, as I understand.
Exactly. You can get into international law now in dealing with assisted reproductive technology.
So are we talking about something that's happening once in a blue moon, or is this a fairly standard thing nowadays, assisted reproduction?
It is becoming more and more common to have children or pregnancies that come about because of assisted reproductive technology. And in fact, it's estimated that there are 100 surrogate pregnancies in Minnesota alone each year. So if you think about the entire 50 states, how many children are being born through just surrogacy? That's a lot. And it's, you know, the number, I think, is just going to be higher as time goes on.
And that's stunning when you think that we have no law on the books about what the rights are of those surrogate parents. What are some of the, we have talked a little bit about some of the things that could go wrong. Any other examples for us to sort of highlight why it's important to get help on this?
I think there's a lot of very, again, delicate issues that you're dealing with. And I think one issue for parents who are going to be entering into a third-party contract and they're going to either use a surrogate or a gestational carrier, somebody who's donating their genetic materials, is you need to be very specific on the intent of the agreement, that this person is going to either donate their material or they're going to carry the pregnancy, but they are, you know, they acknowledge that these people will be the child's parents and they will turn the child over. And you have to have very specific language, and it has to be drafted very correctly. You can't just, you know, throw the idea out there. So again, you're getting into complicated areas where the contract really needs to be well drafted.
And in fact, those are some of the cases we see on the news where the surrogate mother changes her mind and doesn't want to give the child up. And we've watched these heart-wrenching situations on TV where the child's being taken away from the mother and returned to the father.
Exactly. And so because if the person, the surrogate, has, it, you know, is also donating the genetic material, they are a presumed parent, even under Minnesota law. So now you have that debate on who are the parents.
Amazing. Well, Steve.
Great topic. More online, moss-barnett.com. Now, Susan, you have a preview of next week's program.
I do. Mr. Schroyer is going to be back. Tom Schroyer will be here, and he is going to be hosting Andy Malik, who is Moss and Barnett's law librarian. And we've had lots of Andy's material on, and Andy will be joined with Ed Carroll, who is acting director and head of public services for the Hennepin County Law Library, on the topic of the evolving law library, public and private. And you will be amazed at what's in your library.
All right, that is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett here on News Radio 830 WCCO.